You're listening to Around Comics, episode 175. Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast. I'm Christopher Naisman. He's Brian Salazar.
Yeah. He's Tom Caters.
Yeah. We're doing this at three separate locations.
We've had enough.
My part was recorded a week ago. It's all being edited in. So.
I was actually, Scotty's not, if
for yeah, those Scott, no Scotty.
Scotty's not here today, and I actually told him, I'm like, hey, just record a bunch of you know that, and I'll just pump them in, you know, whenever we'll go like, what did you think of
sweet.
And we'll just, but
that
unfortunately
was terrible.
Unfortunately we didn't get that done.
What was wrong with it? Not enough cock.
Not enough tranny cock.
But, you know, we talked, we sent out the email, you did that, and we talked about it on the forum, but we actually haven't talked about it on the show yet. But for those out there that haven't heard, we are going on hiatus, and we're going to take some time away from
show. Well, the Crankcast, Norton
Norton.
They already pronounced us dead.
I feel bad if we did come back. I'd feel
at
like,
this point.
Like we were just building up hype for our own adventure.
Right.
Yeah. But I don't think we're going to get into it. It's just we need some time away. We've been doing this straight for 2 years now, so just going to...
We're sick of each other.
But yeah.
Sick of looking at Tom, looking at Chris.
What y'all don't realize out there is that not only do Sal and I do the show together, we work together. So it really is kind of a...
And you guys have been handcuffed together for 2 weeks.
It was that reality TV show we signed up for. You know, we didn't know what we were getting into, really, quite honestly.
So he's sick of seeing me. So, but, yeah, little break. So we will keep you updated. The site's going to be up. The forum will be up. So
yeah, that stuff's not going anywhere. The RSS feed will be up if you want to listen up. Past
email addresses
episodes.
Still work. So
we honestly, in all honesty, we have no idea what we're going to do at this point. We may come back. We may not come back. We may come back as something completely different.
Doing a wrestling show.
We may do a wrestling,
baseball,
gardening,
wrestling, darts,
baseball, and comics,
darts,
darts podcast.
But we don't know what we're going to do at this point. So, I mean,
stay tuned.
Yeah, it could potentially be this could be it. Possibly. It's possible.
It's possible.
Then again, and maybe not.
I want to do a second show tonight, but I'm already got like two beers and a half pint of Jim Beam here, so I could be gone with
it. Befitting of us the last night to like really
4 hour
for ourselves. Can't just do a show and leave.
Well,
we
just
do two fucking shows.
We just went through 45 minutes of computer problems.
Yeah, it's always
truly
something.
Truly the beauty of doing this show.
Well, I guess we should mention what this show is, and we weren't going to send you off without going over our last The Club episode.
God forbid.
Sal would have been pissed.
No, not really.
You fretted over your picks for two months leading up to it. Well, I'm still thinking of what I want to do for my CD.
I couldn't figure it out, but that doesn't mean... Quite honestly, we could stop right now. I can hit stop right now.
So
dude, I listened to the miss. I did all the stuff, and now I want to talk
about it. Well, what were your picks for this month?
My picks for the club were the CD was The Misfits, Earth AD, Static Age. The movie was SLC Punk, and the comic was the Originals by Dave Gibbons.
Absolutely.
What was the theme that tied all of them together?
Angst.
Angst?
I think it was angst.
That's
yes.
How it always
well,
is.
if you haven't read the Originals yet, by the way, this will obviously be spoilerific as we talk about it. But if you haven't picked up the Originals, and after you listen to the episode, you are so inclined to do
you
so,
still want to.
There is no better place to pick that up than at InStockTrades.com. And this episode of Around Comics is graciously sponsored by InStockTrades.com.
InStockTrades.com is offering this month's reading selection, The Originals, to Around Comics listeners for an amazing 35% off the cover price. Get your copy today for only $11.69 for the soft cover or $16.22 for the hard cover.
Sounds like making love to the
Check out the
there.
Eisner-winning graphic novel by Dave Gibbons and then listen to our discussion today. This doesn't make any sense. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. I'm doing my Billy D. Williams. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essential showcases, archive editions, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 ship for free, and it works every time.
I was trying to think of a line from Empire Strikes Back.
It's not my fault.
It's not my fault.
That's about all I know.
Yeah.
I'm doing the whole show at Billy D.
I'm desperately trying to think of a good
Billy. Lando line.
Lando Calrissian.
Lando.
All right. And
what have we here? You truly belong among the clouds. Yeah, with us among the clouds. Among us, something like that.
And Around Comics, as always, is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. We may be going on hiatus, but Mark Beatty will never take a break.
He's not shutting down the store.
No, the lights will stay on.
No hiatus for him.
And Dark Tower Comics is located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you are in the area, please drop by. We may not be here, but Mark will be.
I'll give you a cold 45.
Yeah, you'll be outside where the Birdman used to be.
I'll be out there with a case of cold Coke 45.
Have we talked about that, by the way?
Birdman's dead, yeah.
Birdman passed away.
That's surprising.
Scotty actually did, not to bring it back, but Scotty actually did on his blog, he did a one of his warm-up drawings was inspired by the Birdman. Well, it was inspired by the Birdman. He's been kicking around this idea for something he wanted to work on for a long time now.
It's called Schizo.
You can read about it on his blog, but it's basically like urban fantasy kind of stuff or something. And
erotic fantasy?
Erotic urban fantasy. And so he like takes things that inspire him from the city, and then he puts a little sort of magical twist kind of thing to it. So.
Well, he lives not too far from Uptown, so there's plenty of inspiration
there.
Well,
I was going to say that.
Sure.
The only magical thing about it, though, is that the pigeons were wearing top hats.
Yes, well.
It didn't seem that magical. I mean, you could get a tiny top hat.
You didn't see the little stopwatches they were carrying on chains?
That's the chains, yeah. The pigeons with monocles?
That's magical.
All right.
Stop it.
Well, I tell you what, let's get into the club.
Billy Crystal over there.
Billy D. Williams.
No, I'm Billy Crystal.
Oh, Billy Crystal.
Doing
Billy D. Williams. Even worse. All right, well, buddy, this is your episode, so why don't you, as we grapple for a church key there.
Oh, you want me to kick it off?
Yeah. It's
all right.
Whatever you want to start with.
I'd like to talk about the album, the CD first, The Misfits.
You do, baby, today.
Dedicage, yes. You know, it's funny. Well, a little bit, I just wanted to give a little bit of history about that album. It was initially recorded in 1978, and kind of an interesting story behind it was that Glenn Danzig, the singer from The Misfits, had actually trademarked a name for his record label. And I can't remember what the name of it was off the top of my head, but he had trademarked this name that he was going to use as a record label. And there was a studio or a record label that wanted it. So they actually bought it from them, and they traded them studio time. Yeah. And that's how they recorded this album. But then once they had it done, they're just, for whatever reason, wasn't interested in it or whatever, and it was shelved for 19 years. The album actually didn't come out until 97,
Were there a bunch of bootlegs and whatnot before it was released?
Oh, sure, yeah. Okay. I mean, there was a lot of those songs came out in different forms, you know, whether it was...
live things, I think.
Yeah, there were live bootlegs, their collection live and that kind of stuff. A lot of that stuff had come out beforehand, but that album as a whole hadn't come out until 1997. And a lot of people, you know, like the Misfits are actually a really influential band in punk, but because they were only around for like 5 years, and they didn't really have an EP or, you know, an extended, you know, album anywhere, so it was like really kind of underground stuff. If that album would have come out in 78, you may have been talking, you know, you might think of the Misfits as much more than what they are. They may be
not just the outfits.
Yeah.
Not as much of a skate punk band as opposed to being a much more musically influential band.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like the Ramones.
Right, exactly. I mean, because they really were influential on a lot of punk bands. You look at, you know, Metallica. I think they, you know, redid two or three of their songs on their Garage Days albums. You know, it's like that kind of thing.
Do you think Glenn Danzig, though, would ever let a movie be made of them talking to a therapist about the Misfits?
No, I don't know.
If we released that in 78.
He would do it as long as he got to punch the therapist in the face with a baby.
One of the things about the CD, and honest, whenever you picked it, when I was in high school, most of my friends were skate punks. I was kind of this odd in between
guy.
I was much like Dexter. Well, no, I was much like Mike in SLC Punk, which we will talk about a little bit later. I was an art student, but I was also a jock. But I hung out with the skate punks, and so I was kind of.
Did
in
you
between.
Bust the rear window out of a? Police squad.
I remember
squatty one night.
I remember. I shouldn't say I remember. I think of Chris in high school as wearing like smoking like a corn cob pipe, like
wearing overalls.
Yeah, but like edgy, like edgy overalls.
I may have had torn overalls, but they did have a Misfit skull stenciled on one side, and I was wearing Vans.
The Misfits for me were a no-brainer. I mean, as a kid growing up who was into like horror stuff and comics and horror movies, I was a huge horror movie fan, and really hated a lot of music in the 80s. In my high school years, music sucked. So the Misfits were
Tiffany, Debbie Gibson.
The Misfits were a no-brainer for me, and I became a really big fan of theirs. And then after high school, I had some friends who were in bands, and I was in bands and stuff. But one group of my friends actually became a Misfits tribute band called Earth AD, and I helped out with that a few times and did some backup vocals and different things with them. So I mean, that went on for a couple of years. They had done that band, so Misfits were, you know, a huge part of my high school and early 20 years. And then, you know, I don't really listen to it much anymore, but listening to this album again this last month was very nostalgic for me, and I still really, really enjoyed their stuff. But you know, that's why I picked it. So
you know what? It sounds very much like punk music from 1978, and I mean that's good in a way, but it's also very well. It's a compliment, but it falls into the same thing as a lot of those, like when I think of those bands where you know, I think of like the Sex Pistols or the Ramones. Or any band from the late 70s that was punk, is that you remember, like, unless you're a really big fan, you only remember like two or three songs from an album. And the only songs I remember are Last Caress and Teenagers from Mars. But those are the two catchiest.
Oh yeah,
those are the two catchiest songs.
20 Eyes.
Walk
Among Us.
But it's sort of, you know, it has that same thing to it where it has a very much obviously not attempting to make catchy songs, so you only have like two. I mean, like, I love the Ramones, and I like a lot of punk stuff, but also a lot of times, like, if you just look at it, it's sort of interesting because, I mean, really legitimately, a lot of the songs do sound the same, which doesn't make it less enjoyable for whatever reasons you like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no question. I mean, these guys were not particularly good musicians.
It's not Lennon McCartney that we're dealing with.
Yeah, you know what I mean. But that's punk.
Part of
point of it is they weren't trying to make music. I mean, at that point in time, music was super overproduced and super, you know, complex, and you had all this stuff. And that's what punk came out of. And the Misfits, I think, were a little bit more melodic in a lot of the stuff they did than some of the other punk albums and or punk bands of those days.
Danzig's certainly like Danzig's like, yeah, singer.
Yeah, Danzig's
like
a bit of a better singer.
UK punk, and which is one of my favorite parts of SLC punk, is talking about the UK punk scene. But I think you saw the American bands with the Ramones and the Misfits, and they were really kind of hearkening back a lot to 50s rock and roll.
Oh yeah,
and that was really the
given
driving
the horror force. Twist. I mean, they were big. Like Danzig was a big, you know, horror movie fan in 50s, 60s movies, that kind of stuff. I mean, the name of the band Misfits comes from Marilyn Monroe's last film. Is the Misfits. And
really?
Oh, yeah, that's where they named it. Oh, wow. That's why.
You know, but a lot of it was like this you know, utter burnout on, like, prog rock bands.
Right.
And the 15-minute drum solos. And these bands were getting together to do the tight
two-minute
30.
We don't know how to play, but we're going to do it anyway. It's three chords and an attitude and you know.
I also think stuff, though, like that is... It's almost ill-served in a way, in that how we look back at music is that we look back at music and we look at albums, and we say, like, oh, this album, you know, when really, like, stuff like the Misfits or stuff like the Ramones and all of that, so much more of the experience of why people liked it was seeing it and experiencing it at the time. Like, seeing a band like that is almost as much of the experience as...
Sure.
As listening to it, but the way we look at music and the way, like, we sort of categorize music historically is we're always like, this is their, you know, best album.
Right, this
and
is, yeah, their
it's
masterwork
sort of,
or whatever.
And I think it's always going to be sort of unfair to bands like the Misfits or the Ramones, any of those, because while the albums are enjoyable, they are such a, they're so tied into what, you know, music was like at the time or what culture was like
sure.
at the time. That it's always going to seem you're going to have a hard time showing someone
fairly
it, yeah judging
fairly,
it,
yeah fairly judging it today
holding it up to someone and being like listen to this without knowing anything and
right.
be like you know it doesn't mean that people might not enjoy it but it's like the criteria for how we judge the longevity of
well,
things
and especially with punk a lot of that has to go with commercial appeal and as much commercial appeal as those bands got later. And because their influence is still felt today. You can still go out and buy Misfits CDs and Ramones
CDs. I still
CDs.
See, like, Misfits shirts yeah. on kids, teenage kids today.
And that's, when did, and I don't want to call the Misfits, like, a poser band. I'm not a punk, okay? So I can't sit here and say, well, that's a poser band. But there was a point where, that tipping point where the commercial appeal of that band, you would see these you know, punk kids that would have the Misfits stenciled denim jackets, and you're like, that kid has never listened to a Misfits
well, I think
CD.
Well, it was much later when, yeah. I mean, they always had a sort of marketing plan. Yeah, they were pretty smart guys. I mean, they're dudes from New Jersey, and they, you know, they kind of knew what they were doing. I mean, obviously Danzig had an idea for what he was trying to sell with it. You know, he wasn't like, but I mean that's part of punk too. I mean punk was way more.
Well, I think it's
punk lasted way longer as a image and as a style and than it did as a music.
Well, I think that
you know
ties,
what I mean?
That ties into the ties into the movie because I think people look back on stuff and they look back and they say, oh, you know, the Misfits came together because they were so sick of how things are in
right.
the world, or the Sex Pistols got together because they were. And, but it was really just like. Created out of boredom because the world was boring, you know, and these bands didn't form to like think like, oh,
we're gonna change the world,
we're gonna topple
right.
music and
except
we're
the Clash.
So important. Oh well, yeah.
Well, I mean they were.
Joe Strummer read a lot of his own
bullshit.
Yeah. His own press as he got
older. These were probably guys that loved music, but they were feeling the disassociation with culture and the same angst that all these kids
well,
were.
And they're just young kids. I mean, yeah. It's like what young kid doesn't want to be in a band at some point, especially in the 70s, late 70s. It's like that's you know this is what they could do. This was something that they could because they weren't. I mean, Jerry Only was not a terribly good bassist. Still isn't to this day particularly good bass player.
I mean,
you know,
but they played.
Danzig could sing
but they
to a certain
their
degree, and I thought it was. I think Danzig's a pretty good lyricist. I think you know for what he's doing, I think he's
he's
pretty clever and
the Jim Morrison of punk bands.
Evil Elvis is what his.
I don't know if I want to attach that.
Oh,
they called him the Evil Elvis at one point. Was sort of his moniker, but
I was just saying I. I'd like Danzig more than Jim Morrison.
Okay.
But the whole Misfits thing, I mean, they came back in various forms without Glenn Danzig, with there's been like three other singers or four other singers and different drummers and different, you know, Jerry only and his brother Doyle have really kind of carried that band on, and they've become, I mean, I saw them like four times after the, I mean, they broke up in 83. Wow. I never saw him. I mean, then I didn't see him with Glenn Danzig. I saw him years later, when they weren't, you know. But it was still like Thomas saying, it's like just the. It was like this music that I had heard all through high school, and then going and seeing the band. And it wasn't about like. It wasn't so much about the music as just sort of the event. You know what I mean? It was like,
yeah,
it was just
experience.
Cool. It was, to me, it was just cool, and I liked the music, and I still like it, but. You know, it. I'm not like. I mean, I wasn't a punk. I wasn't a punker kid at all. I was, you know, I was much more of a '70s kid, like classic rocks. What you? Well, it wasn't classic at the time, but you know, I mean, I was much more. Yeah, there you go. I mean, but you know, in, like I said, in the '80s, I was just searching for something to listen to.
What I love about this band and the other whatever, there are different bands that do this, no matter what genre they are. But the Misfits typified a culture, and there are very few bands that you can attach as being so closely associated with a culture. Whenever you talk about late '70s and early '80s punk culture, that is one of the...
Well, it depends on who you talk to, though. I mean, it's funny that I never see them mentioned. Like, I've watched every punk documentary ever made. They're never mentioned.
Well, it's really divided up really oddly, though, because it's like... when I sort of, I used to really like the Descendants and all that, so I went back and listened to old punk rock, but I'll be honest, I never, the Misfits, like, none of my friends listened to the Misfits.
They didn't fit into that same...
Was it more of a skater thing? Because, you know, that's the thing, is that, you know, all my friends were skate punks, and that was the default band.
I don't necessarily, like I said, I wasn't necessarily I wasn't a punk rocker at all. I got into the Misfits from listening to, like, I dug Alice Cooper. Okay. And it was just that whole horror thing that and then I went from Alice Cooper to the Misfits to, like, Glenn, or to Rob Zombie. You know what I mean? It just kept going on.
I think that might be some of it. Because I remember when, I didn't know anyone that listened to them. I mean, I knew lots of people that listened. Of course, I'm younger than you guys, so it wasn't like people were listening to it when I was around, but when people listened to punk, they never listened to Misfits.
Well, it's because
old, Tom.
The only stuff in the early 80s, actually throughout most of the 80s, the only stuff of theirs that was around was really like these really bad either bootleg cassettes,
EPs
that were awful. I mean, they were so bad. It was like you would listen to it, but no. And also it was like bootlegs of their live shows. Their live shows are completely different than their albums. Their live shows, those 2 minute songs turn into 1 minute songs. You know what I mean? They're playing it way faster, and they're not worried about it. You know, I mean, they're just blazing through stuff. And it's a completely different thing.
Well, it was about atmosphere and energy and just expressing the angst in live shows. Where the studio records, there was actually some thought to those. They are in there, and you hear it in this record because they have the start and stops and all the retakes, that they were trying to produce good records.
Yeah. I think it's Glenn Danzig probably driving most of that.
Sure.
There's that 1 5-minute song.
Yeah, but that wasn't on the original album. That was put on later on, and that was something
I was like,
that was...
I one song that's 5 minutes long. This is insane.
But, I mean, you know, it's just something that it's one of the few bands that really, really I connected to as a youth and
a youth.
Because
it was angry, horror, gothic, crappy.
You know, what's funny, and this doesn't really have much to do with the music, but it's sort of like... One of the funny things I think about punk is that people sort of associate themselves with punk when they're younger and they're angry. And then, not that people grow out of it, but, I mean, we'll talk about this with SLC. Like, people take a certain portion of it and move on with their life, but most people don't dress like the Misfits for their whole life. You know, like, you don't, like, people take some of that. There are some, but most people that do take a piece of it and then they go on to the next part of their life. Yet Glenn Danzig kind of has... you always see him, and he's sort of the Glenn Danzig, you know? Like, you don't see him not be that way.
Right.
So, but it's like he's old. Yeah. Whoa. No. So like he had is that
you never evolved past that at all. And
I mean, it's an obviously on some level it's an act. Sure. You know, like you sing songs about killing babies and raping moms. Obviously, Glenn Danzig's not running around killing babies and raping moms. Right. You know, like, but yet. It's you, whenever you see anyone talk about him, or if you go on YouTube and look up Glenn Danzig, you know, like the top videos are someone punching Danzig. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and that's sort of like the image. Like, 50. There's never, yeah, there's, it's, and it always seems weird to me because it's like, God, is he locked into that? Like, how does he feel about.
Well, without that, without.
Yeah,
I mean,
what
you
is.
Know what I mean?
Then
when
what
does
is,
the act yeah. become reality?
Yeah, like, and he's. Because that same aggression that is you feel as a kid, I think, sort of. Naturally for most people fades and changes to something else
right.
that maybe you don't associate, you know, like listening to the Misfits when I was 13 would be different from listening to the Misfits now because I can see like there's a time when you would listen like, oh yeah, this is crazy, you know,
but
now you listen,
shit.
Yeah, right. Now you listen to it and you're like, you get the theatrical part of it.
Sure.
But it's like, what if you had to do that all the time?
Like, all the, well, like you mentioned Alice Cooper, but I mean, that guy, yeah. he went on to be, you know, like he'd end up at like golf outings.
Yeah, you've seen much
you know,
more
you know
of
what
him,
I mean? Him
just
being Vincent Furnier, or whatever
yeah.
his name is, you know what I mean?
So
just
I think it's different.
Very good high school, he was a high school track star.
He used to live here in Chicago
did
area
he?
Yeah, for a long time.
But that ties into the movie.
Yeah, the movie. Well, let's talk about the movie, SLC Punk.
I hadn't watched it in a long time.
I love this movie. It's yeah. just, you know, it's an independent, small independent film, and when it came out, I laughed my ass off at it. The thing I like about it, just to give it a little bit of setup, it's called SLC Punk. It's Salt Lake City Punk. It's about these two punkers living in Salt Lake City and hating it because of the you know,
because it's Utah.
Because it's Utah and yeah. the Mormons and
I'm
how
using kids hate wherever they're from.
Well, yeah, and that too. And it's them and their sort of punker friends and the lifestyle and the culture that they live in. And it's mostly about the one guy who's sort of right at the end of
college.
Well, he's at the end of college, but he's at the end of sort of going from being a young, angry kid to going, well, what do I do now being young and angry?
He's moved past the age where it's acceptable
yeah.
to think that you're going to topple the system without having to do something about it.
Right.
You know?
He's sort of starting to realize that, and that's kind of the movie. But
he's moving from being young and angry to just angry.
Fuck him, fuck this party, and fuck everything. Above all... fuck anarchy.
Yeah, well, and not even sure why he's angry, though, anymore.
Yeah,
you know
what
that's
what I really like about the movie. It's like his parents aren't really bad to him, and he has actually a good relationship in a way with his dad, you know. And the thing I really like about this movie, because it reminds me a lot of various people I've known, and not just like punk rockers, but people I knew in college that were really like radical into politics mm-hmm. and stuff about how... people they attach themselves to these really radical ideas when it's convenient and they're not forced to have to do anything about it.
Right.
You know, it's like easy. It's and that's not to say that
communism.
Yeah, or, yeah. It's like, but that changes as you get older and you have to realize that like no one's going to give you anything.
Right.
You know, like that portion of your life where you're allowed to
changing the system is way harder than just. Thinking and talking
about
it.
And a lot of it is sort of, a lot of the cool parts about that movie is sort of just raging against stuff that is...
It shouldn't be that...
It's not that big of a deal. It's not... It would be way easier to concentrate on... like how, and at the end of the movie, that's sort of like the moral
right.
of it is sort of like, well, it's pointless to kind of be this way when I can do more.
Right.
Being a lawyer, yeah. you know, going to law school.
One of the things I love about it so much is that, and you touched on it too, is that it seems like a collection of stories that anyone would have from that time in their life.
Yeah.
There's guys in that movie that I know, that yeah. I went to high school with, that I grew up with, and it was semi-autobiographical by the writer and director, and it's just these crazy, wacky stories over and over again, but it's put in a very cohesive way with this story of gosh, I can't think of the main guy's name now.
Matt Lillard's character.
Yeah, Matt Lillard. I can't
Steve-O.
Think of Steve-O.
It's kind of his last summer of rebellion.
Yeah, The summer of nothing.
Well, it's almost the last year. There was a lot of snow.
I had a summer of nothing after college.
Did you?
But I wasn't a punk. I just drank a lot. I had no illusions about it.
One of the things that, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but one of the things you see
in the show.
One of the things that you see in the punk culture is that there are punks that are out there to just kind of, you know, create mayhem and chaos and destroy stuff. But Steve was one of the other types of punks that he was kind of an intellectual punk. It's while he was about chaos and anarchy, but he approached it from a very intellectual standpoint.
I think it's a very interesting. I think
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
If you ever gone to a protest, I went to an anti-war rally. I hate to get political, but I went to an anti-war rally, and then 16-year-old anarchist showed up. And, like, that's. And I thought, when you're in high school, what the fuck do you care about anarchy? Like, you're like what do you... It's
even
easy
know
for you
what
to,
anarchy
yeah, like,
is, really.
You haven't no had to rules. Make any sort of choice about anything in your life. So it's easy for you to say, oh, this system, anyone who works in the system is like a sellout.
Right.
When you're 16, well, no one wants to buy you, you know? It's really easy for you to...
Well, it's funny, too,
in the movie, too, is when he's having that discussion with his friend's older brother, where
Chris,
they're talking about, you know, what's the, you know, are things really falling apart all the time?
Right.
Is destruction, like, the only way that anything can be done? And it's not necessarily the only way.
The cycle of entropy.
I Heroin Bob is a great character to me. Once again, that guy, I know a guy. I mean, I went to high school with a guy like that. I know a guy. And it's funny, you know, because in the end, you know, Steve-O's basically at one point sort of confronts him and kind of calls him out as a poser. But then by the end of the film, you kind of realize, you know, he realizes that it's like, no, you know what? He was more punk than any of us.
Yeah.
We're all sort of the poser. And that was like this friend of ours that, you know, who was a punker, but we all kind of made fun of him because we grew up with him and knew him since kindergarten.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden one day he's a punker, and it's like, what are you talking about? You're the same douchebag we've always known. You're not any different. You know what I mean? But it was just sort of that that weirdness about what it means. You know, what it means. Yeah. You know, to one guy it's you know, safety pins and green hair. And to somebody else, it's music. And to somebody else, it's politics.
A political statement.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So it's like, I don't know. I mean, punk
uniform.
To me is such a... It's
the uniform.
Well, I mean,
I do love that.
The thing about Bob is that I felt like he was a punk because he wasn't just an outcast from society. Society didn't have a spot for him. It touched on the relationship with he and his father, which was non-existent.
Right.
His father was a psychopath, a schizophrenic veteran or whatever.
Yeah.
There was just no place for him. And I think in society, whenever you feel like there is no place for you, that the punk culture is,
well, at that time,
mod culture, or whatever culture,
whatever is.
Whatever, that's another one of the themes in the movie is that, like, for as much as everyone's trying to be unique, everyone can be divided up into their
little groups.
Their little group by the way they dress, like anyone.
I love
does, really.
I love when he's at the party and he kind of gives you the breakdown.
The fight,
whatever.
Why do we
just
fight?
Just a great. the punks beat the crap out of the mods. The mods. Kick the shit out of the New Wavers, and they
everyone
don't do
hates the neo-Nazis. Everyone hates the
Nazis.
But there were some interesting things in the film too. I mean, I thought, you know, stylistically there was some interesting stuff going on. I mean, with stop motion and different things. And
I lived in an apartment that looked eerily close to their really shitty.
I think you were punk. You just didn't know it.
I think I might have been. And I just it was going on around me, and I had no fucking idea what was going on.
Going back to the Nazi thing, that was actually one of the things that kind of cracked me up, because I think there's, you know, for people that have never kind of been around punks or whatnot, there's a misconception that punks are Nazis. Punks aren't Nazis. Punks are anarchists.
Punks
they're absolutely counter.
Let's get out there.
They're
not out there anymore.
Are they? Is it dead?
It's been dead since
81. I don't know. I think people made it out of just air. Like, they made the idea. Because what it... Well, you know, in the movie, too, it's the idea of thinking that for some reason you're so special that you're the one that, you know, like, I'm the one who sees how the world really is. Yeah. And why can't everyone else see it? When in reality, other people can see how things are, but they just find a way to live in the world and still function and do the things they want to do and change things without having to.
And there's, I mean, if you look at punks, there's not, I mean, throughout, you know, modern history, there's been, you know, the variation of that. It's anyone, you know, between the ages of 15 and 22, you're pissed off at the world in one way or the other, and you're trying to figure out a way, you know, to deal with that. And it's either through music or drugs or whatever the hell, you know, you're going to find. And comic books, who knows what it could be. You know what I mean? Being a punk is no different than...
It's fun.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, the funny thing is about punks is that, like I said, I wasn't a punk. I didn't dress up like a punk. I listened to punk music, but I wasn't.
I went to Catholic school.
I always envied the guys that I knew that were willing to, like, you know, shave their head in a mohawk and dye it purple and do whatever, you know. There was something fun about them walking into a mall or a store and everybody over the age of 20 freaking out, looking at, you know what I mean? It was like, to me, that it's trying to be unique while the whole world's trying to make you the same as everyone else.
When I was in high school, I remember Fugazi used to come through Green Bay all the time, and the Descendants used to come through. And I remember I had a friend who went to Descendants show, and this other kid we went to high school with that we weren't friends with was also at that show and said that my friend wasn't punk enough. And I always thought that's sort of missing the point.
Of punk, not
necessarily, but it's always like when you create a group, when you're creating like an ethos where you're like, this is for everyone who feels like they don't fit in the system, and then
you become
obsessed. Because that's also a great part of the film is how in these subcultures that are about, like, let's gather all the people that feel different, become completely obsessed with picking out the people amongst themselves who don't fit in.
Right.
You know, like, that's the number one, it's like, we don't fit in with everyone else. Number two, let's pick out all the people that don't fit in with us. You know, obsession.
It's a natural thing. And that's why, you know, I was so glad that they had the one mod character that hung out with, Johnny Mod.
That hung out with everybody.
What did they say he...
He was an ambassador between the groups.
Between the tribes.
The tribes.
There's just so many characters in there that is eerily remind me of people that I, you know, mm-hmm. and event, you know, it's like that weird party at the end. I've been to that weird party.
I've had that weird party.
You know, yeah, like the dude, the strange Russian dude with a gun, and you know, I know that dude. You know what I mean? It's like I've been in that situation. It's just weird how all these events, you know, it very familiar, and I'm sure to a lot of other people too. But
and I was telling you about this today. Whenever I went back home earlier this a couple months ago, my dad and I went back to Southern Illinois, and we're walking around the streets of Carbondale, which
you beat the shit out of a Nazi.
Yes, my dad and I both
axe hammer.
We're walking out of one of the, you know, the local haunts. They're one of the bars. And we've been playing pool, and walk out, and there's a guy with a cup, you know, wanting change, and
a beggar,
yeah,
and a bum,
and I walk out, and you know, being from Chicago, you kind of just have a tendency to walk past.
And
that
it was you,
not me.
It was you from the future.
No, it was a guy. I went. It was one of my. I'm not going to call him a friend, but he's one of the guys that hung out on the fringes of the group of friends that I hung out with in high school. And it was just like, holy crap, I went to high school with that guy. I know that guy. And so when I'm watching SLC Punk and the same thing happens
Sean.
To Steve, it's just like, oh, man, hey, how you doing? I'm a beggar now. And it's just like, yeah, I had that experience, and it was really... It's something that sticks
and that was
with
sort
you.
Of the first turning point for Steve-O too, seeing that and just going, fuck,
shit.
Is that what I'm heading towards? You know, is that
what
this leads to, kind of thing? You know,
So anyone that's left their home and then goes back and see the people that hit bottom.
There was a guy from my high school that we made fun of who drove a car in a drive-by shooting.
Wow!
Not because we made fun of him.
I think I've told this one before.
I'm pretty sure it did not help.
Help.
Sure it didn't help his self-esteem.
I went to high school and hung out with a guy who killed a woman with a monkey wrench. About an hour later, had sex with her dead body and took off. And is on death row now. Hey, Gino, if you're listening.
Hey, Gino.
I never really liked you, dude.
Oh.
Write us an iTunes.
Careful, they got the internet.
Write us an iTunes. Write us an iTunes review.
No. But now, to get off that.
You're listening, prison.
I think to get off that very morose beat of the show, I think the SLC Punk was actually, it had a very positive message. It was, at the end, a pretty uplifting movie, because it showed this guy go through all of these things, and at the end, even though, you know, we haven't talked about his buddy Bob, but he loses his best friend, basically the only person that he could really be of, you know, kind of one mind with, but at the end of it, he comes out and he's obviously a much stronger person, and everything that he's gone through, he's kind of like ready to take the next step and be.
It's sort of
be
like
a man.
He doesn't have to like the need to wear some type of uniform to like
believe what he believes.
Believe what
he doesn't have to convince himself anymore.
Yeah, that, I think this is a good opportunity to say that Round Comics does support its prison listeners. And just because we're going on hiatus doesn't mean you can't write us an iTunes review from prison.
They have to have a credit card number.
If you're from prison, you write us an iTunes review. I'll send you something.
One other scene I just wanted to mention in the film that I just thought about, which I thought was pretty important too, is the scene where he catches his sort of girlfriend sleeping with the other guy at the party, and he flips out, even though they have an agreement. And it's
those agreements. Right. Where it's like
those agreements are great until it, you know, kicks you in the balls.
Until someone uses the agreement, actually. You know.
But that I thought was very kind of telling about the whole idea. It's like, you know, all this stuff in theory is great. You know, anarchy and rebelling and all that. It's all great in theory, but when it comes to really, you know what I mean? Like,
doesn't necessarily work in the real world. Yeah. You know? Doesn't work in the real world.
Right.
Well, and his point of this guy was pissing on my territory. And it wasn't even that he was really in love with her. I think there was definitely, you know, an affection there.
Feelings. It was just a matter. It was just... it's just a matter of, you have an open relationship as long as nothing happens.
theory.
Yeah,
that's the movie, and I thought the book were very similar.
The comic, the originals?
Yeah. The originals by Neil Gaiman.
I hadn't read this before.
I didn't know it existed. I will say the only thing that threw me off about it was that it's very much... If you've seen the movie Quadrophenia,
yes,
right,
it's very much
like that,
very similar in a lot of ways, like in the structure of the story. Not to say that Dave Gibbons like copied Quadrophenia, but I mean literally from the punk versus rockers,
right? Well, it's a very common story. I mean, it's not a very complex
than punkers.
No, punk versus
in Quadrophenia,
mods and rockers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a very
Teddy Boys.
Pretty simple.
Teddy Boys.
It's a very pretty simple story, I think, and it's pretty quick read. I mean, I almost consider it like a short story because it wasn't necessarily like from a lot of different ways. It wasn't really necessarily a fulfilling story. You didn't get a lot of time to learn that much about the characters. It was very succinct.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to pick up pretty quickly on stuff. The art was great. Gibbons' art was fantastic, I thought. Yeah. It certainly fit in with the theme of what we were, you know, the movie and the series, which is what I wanted.
It was very stylish, and it was it's a book about style.
Style's all about style.
All about style, baby. I'm a victim of style.
Yeah. Fashion victim.
No, but if you haven't read the originals, it's basically about about two mods, basically. It seems like it's kind of in the future because they have hover bikes or hover scooters
maybe
or whatever.
Maybe Gibbons hates drawing wheels.
Maybe. But pretty much other than that and like a little bit clothing-wise, everything else is pretty much...
It feels contemporary.
Like it would be the 80s, you know?
Yeah.
I think, and we'll come back to that, but I think it had to be important for that story to be set in the future. And I think we can come back to that.
Well, I don't know that it was in the future, though. They never said it was.
Well, hover bikes and...
Well, it could be alternate reality. It doesn't necessarily mean the future. Well, anyway, I don't know. And it's basically about this one kid who's trying to join this group called the Originals that are a bunch of mods, and they're like the big badass mods, which always seemed weird to me that mods would be badasses because...
They think they would ruin their nice clothing.
Yeah, you know?
To get in fights.
They drive scooters and dress... in I don't know. Anyway, but
hovers, not scooters.
Whatever. He's trying to join, and him and his friend Bach end up actually joining, and it's just sort of his journey throughout that world. And he's like, you know, 18 years old, and he's kind of trying to be a badass and get, you know, gets in some trouble and
get the girls, get the bike.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I mean, it's not a very complex story at all. I think it's it seemed like it may have been a bit you know, autobiographical, maybe.
I think it I thought it was, I thought visually it was really great to look at. I think I think it could have stood to be longer, actually.
Yeah,
with more stuff with
the characters.
Yeah, I mean, I was very visually interested, but also at the same time it was very, if I hadn't seen Quadrophenia and hadn't known how to feel about it, some of the stuff, I don't know how I would have felt about it, because I felt very much like I walked away from it, I'm like, I knew going into the next part like how I should feel
right
about stuff, and the ending is different, but it's sort of, it's very much tied into SLC and the fact that someone dies because this lifestyle gets out of control, and Quadrophenia kind of has that type of thing too, where the main character, this lifestyle, which starts off as fun, it does have consequences for
it.
Sure. But I thought that was the only thing that bothered me about it. It was the whole time I was reading, I was like, do I like this because I like Quadrophenia? Do I like this because I was like, I like that movie, and I know what's going to happen because I know.
Well, it's funny you say that because Scotty's not here, but I actually talked to him about the book before he left. And one of the things he said that he didn't care for it very much. He loved the art, but he didn't care for the story. He thought it was not developed enough. He didn't feel anything for the characters. He didn't feel that the characters were developed enough, and he didn't really get attached to any of them.
I don't know if it was over.
Well, I don't know. I'm just telling you what I'm not.
He's not here to defend himself.
But one of the things was he felt like it was very cookie cutter, and that he knew exactly what was going to happen next. He knew how the story was going to play out. I doubt that he's ever seen Quadrophenia, but that was just what he kind of said. Now, I didn't get that necessarily from it at all, and we had a pretty long conversation about it because I go back to the short story. It's a very short book, and I think it's written, I don't know if Gibbons did it on purpose or if it's just his writing style, but he wrote it in a way where it's, you have to look at the subtleties, you almost have to look at the subtext to get the things about the characters. And if you don't, it's over very quickly. So I don't know, you know, I enjoyed it myself. I got enough of an attachment with these characters in wanting to know. I mean,
what I liked about it is that it did leave you with a sense of wanting to know more about them, and we've been talking this week about,
really, I didn't get that at all. I
wanted to know more about Viv. You know, I wanted to know more about her background. I wanted to know more about Bach as a person.
But is that intentional by Gibbons, or is that a lack of writing ability?
That I wanted to know more about them, but I still felt fulfilled at the end of the story, I think is a good thing. I would rather see that than knowing too much about things that I don't really care about. That makes any sense. And we've been talking, you know, one of the things about, you know, to go back to SLC Punk for a second, one of the things I really liked about it is that it was an hour and 27-minute movie that told a story and got in and got out. We've been talking about three-hour movies, and I think that, you know, that there are a lot of movies out there that are too long for what they do, and I think that the originals could have been the same thing. It could have gone on for another 40 or 50 pages and told more story than it really needed to. I felt like it told the story that it needed to
tell. I think the difference, though, between SLC, and obviously it's a movie and a book, so there's going to be huge differences, but also in SLC Punk, all of the major characters, I felt like they each had their own moment that you really got to see what they were about. But like in the originals, one of the big problems I had is a character like Bach. Like, you never really had a moment where you got that they were friends, but you never had a moment where you really knew anything
about him
that made him different from any of the other mods, except for the fact that they were friends. You know,
and he was black.
And he was black. But, I mean, that was never... That was never part of the
story. But isn't
that kind of
like life?
Well, yeah,
I mean,
but
don't
you don't get
everyone's backstory.
But I don't read, but I'm not reading this to read someone's like journal.
Okay.
About their, right. You know, like, that's there's fair. A difference.
Yeah,
in those
I don't
things.
Know. I'm conflicted between it. Like I said, the feelings of, was it too short because Gibbons, that's the best that he could do writing-wise, or did he do it on purpose because he was trying to stylistically, you know, I haven't read enough of his other work. I don't know what else he's even done, so I don't know.
It's different from Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah. That's true. It is different from Green Lantern
Corps. I mean, I liked it, but I felt kind of like there was a lot of givens for how you're supposed to feel about certain characters. Like when Bach dies, I was like, I know you're supposed to feel bad because he's his friend.
But I didn't feel too bad.
But you were never attached to the character.
I was like,
because,
well, he was just the other mod that he was friends with. I was like, you never, and like in the movie, which I thought for a very economical hour and 27 minutes, you got moments where you got to see, you know.
Were you sad about Heroin Bob?
I was really sad because you did get to see moments where you saw what he was about.
Right.
And why he was a punk. Obviously, the book would have had to have been longer to do this. Maybe Vincent didn't want to do a longer book. But I never understood why any of the characters really wanted to be mods other than, like, we want to be mods.
Right.
And maybe that's not what he's going for, but also then on the other hand, that's not, as I'm having a conversation with myself.
Maybe it is what he's going for.
Maybe
that's
what he's going
That's what I'm kind of up in the air about. It's like,
maybe
was all this intentional? Was this what he was trying to say, or am I reading into it, looking at the deficiencies of the story and
the
reading into it?
The art was really cool.
The art was, really
cool.
Yeah, I mean,
is there a story between pages, basically? And I think there is on some accounts. I think the main character was well enough developed.
Or Lee? I don't know. How
do you pronounce his name?
I'd say Lee, but...
I'd say Lee, too.
I thought he was a fairly well-developed character in that by the end of the book, I didn't like him. He was... And it's not that... I didn't like the person that he was. It's not that I couldn't add... if he were to mature, he could turn into a good man, but at that point, at the end of the book, I'm like, what a douchebag. And from that point, how he treated Bach, which was very complicated. First of all, he was Bach's friend whenever it was probably very unfashionable in the context of that book to be the friend of a black guy. But at the same time, he always treated Bach as a second class friend. And it was
well, he treated everyone. I mean, he was only friends with someone.
He treated
Viv
like a second class girlfriend.
I mean, when it would have worked for him.
See, the thing, and what's funny is that when he starts going on with that girl, I expected there to be more stuff with Bach, but there.
But once again, was that a choice he made?
Yeah.
Because you leave your guys, your friends, when you start going out with a girl. You know what I mean? I don't know. I don't know if it was just the nature of the story or.
I just wanted more stuff with characters.
Yeah, more development.
Yeah, I just felt like.
And maybe it was just Gibbons said, "Hey, this is as long as I'm doing."
I want to draw a hover bike.
Leave me alone.
Cool coats.
I don't know.
It was a good book.
Yeah, it was good. Like I said, I think it could have easily been longer and better being longer, which is rarely that I ever say that about something. So,
well, I think that something that's interesting, the way that the originals ended and the way that SLC Punk ended. Is whenever he, what was the last line of the originals was?
I'm so old. I'm 18.
I'm 18.
Yeah.
And SLC Punk ended kind of like after that statement of, you know, Lee's at this point where it's like, you know, life ends at 18, and SLC Punk. I forget exactly what the line was, but you know, you're punk because you're fighting against things until the end of the world, and then when the end of the world doesn't come, you have to figure out what to do next. And Lee was at that point of the end of the world has come and I don't know what to do next. There is life after 18, and that's the whole thing about punk.
Should be a lorry driver. A hover lorry.
Does punk end at 18?
Well, I think what creates the feeling of wanting to be punk doesn't. I don't know. I think eventually it's beaten out of you.
Yeah. But is punk trying to stay away from 19, you know, I guess? Or
I don't know. It,
That's true for everyone. No one wants
yeah,
to
I don't think it's just punk. I think it's anyone, see, you know.
I'm leery of this whole attachment of, like, that there's some sort of magical punk ethos that exists that... So I always see whenever people are like, oh, that's not punk enough, or that's... You know, yeah. Punk. It's
it wa-
like,
walks
it's
a
excuse,
fine line, doesn't
it's
it?
It's just an excuse to...
poser.
Yeah, no, it's just an excuse to put yourself on a pedestal.
Right.
Opposed to someone. When
it's
I hear
insecurity
a lot of people say,
so that...
You know what would be really punk is not giving a shit what other people do right. instead of having to obsess about
it's,
picking
it's
out everything
like the
else.
Supreme, well, it's the Supreme Court in pornography. You know, what is punk? I don't know. I'll see it, you know?
Taking the away from the three things we did for the club, it's like you have sort of three different... You have, like, this almost manufactured image punk... this horror punk album, and then you have the movie, which is the you know, these kids battling against themselves a bit, and then you have mods in the future on hover bikes, but, I mean, it's all kind of the same. You know
it's
what I mean?
Parallel.
Yeah, it's very parallel.
It's a parallel.
It's a parallel.
Earth
I think it's a parallel.
It's all coming yeah. of age.
Earth M.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's just growing up and not happy with who you are, where you're at.
That's what this whole show has been about. This is what,
right.
170-odd episodes.
I'm 34. I feel so
old. It's about
old.
Growing up.
Growing up.
It's about growing
we're,
up.
We're 175. I feel
so
old.
About growing up. And if,
so
we were punk,
if we were punk,
we would have ended at, like, 80. But we're not. We were sellouts.
Oh, that episode was terrible.
Yeah, we were.
That episode was terrible.
We were sellouts, so we kept going. Yeah, we're like Danzig.
I got a laptop out of it, at least.
Yeah, true. we're like, if we kept doing this show, we'd be sort of like the 50-year-old Danzig going on and on.
Just keep trying to be
where people
angry.
Outgrow our show.
The quiet panelologists at work would come up to us backstage and whip our asses.
No, those guys aren't whipping anybody. They whip
they're English.
They probably
like
dress nice and wear
two,
and drive
yeah.
hovers. I kick the
hunting
shit out of them.
Foxes.
Yeah, John and Matt are most definitely mods.
They're hunting
I would
foxes,
say.
Probably.
Hunting foxes and having tea.
Probably still Compass. Shattered over Princess Di.
All right, well, guys, shall we wrap our last club episode here for
sure.
a while? Anyway,
that was a tight hour.
Sweet.
So,
just the way I like it. Short and or short sweet.
And or.
All right. Well, I tell you, I don't know if we have any voicemails or emails, but probably not going to do any voicemails for a while, obviously. But the emails are still up and running if you want to email us at info@aroundcomics.com.
I have gotten a lot of emails this week.
Thanks, everybody. Yeah. We got some really nice messages from folks.
It's sort of like going to your own funeral.
Yeah,
it is.
You know, I didn't really think about it until like today when we got here, and it's like Norton brings us a pie as a going away present.
Chris Marshall comes from
Detroit.
Yeah,
he's wearing all
and I'm just like, wow, this is kind of melancholy. I didn't even really consider this like maybe.
It's because we're so fucking happy about it.
Were we gonna do another one?
I don't care if you want.
All right, we'll do another. I don't
what
know when it'll
do?
Come out.
Oh, really?
The show that won't die.
Seriously?
Yeah. He can't end it, dude.
Okay, what are we going to do in the other one?
Well, he wants Mike and Chris. And
yeah,
we got
Chris, and I think John's going to drop by.
Why don't we
if
just,
I get uncomfortable, I'm leaving.
Oh, John, you're leaving?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to sit here and talk about...
We're not going to talk about us. We're going to talk about comics.
Thank
so.
God.
All right. But I tell you what, we do need to talk about. We need to talk about our great sponsor, InStockTrades.com.
Are they even paying us still?
Sure.
This episode was sponsored by InStockTrades.com. Thank you to InStockTrades.com for offering this month's reading selection, the originals, and nothing else. To Around Comics listeners for an amazing 35% off the cover price. Get your copy today for $11.66.
Stop it.
For the soft cover and $16.22 for the hard cover.
You truly belong
with us amongst the clouds. What have we here? Check out the Eisner-winning graphic novel by Dave Gibbons.
I haven't seen your droid.
That's the only impression I can halfway do. All right, Billy Dee Williams. Who would have thought that? Check out the amazing, the Eisner-winning graphic novel by Dave Gibbons, and then listen.
Halfway's a bit generous.
Just go to InStockTrades.com and order shit from them because
they're awesome.
This copy doesn't make sense any longer. The show's over.
Oh, I gotta read. You know what else doesn't make sense?
I quit.
You know what else doesn't make sense? And
what?
I notice a lot out there. People
what
being
is
selfish.
It? Tell me.
You know how they're selfish?
I know how people can be selfish.
Because they love comic books, but they don't help support the Hero Initiative.
You have to help.
The Hero Initiative creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an
I'm
avenue
just
back
trying
in
to help.
It's a chance for all of us to give back something to the people who have given us so much enjoyment. For more information, visit www.zeroinitiative.com or call 310-909-7809. Not many people knew this, but Stan Lee had to make a deal with the Empire to keep Marvel going.
I've just made a...
And you know why I'm excited about the Hero Initiative?
What?
You know why I'm excited about the Hero Initiative?
Why?
Because I'm going to be working at the Hero booth at WonderCon.
Whoopee.
Like tomorrow and Saturday. And I'm going to meet Darwin Cook, who's going to be there.
He's going to slap you.
He's going to fucking... Is it going to be open hand or backhand?
Backhand. He's going to cuff him.
Start a pool.
Might be with a pistol. He might
and
pistol
I'm also
going
to meet Bill Willingham.
Blackjack. Billingham?
Billingham. Billingham. Darwin Cook.
You
I'm
have to
be
call
working.
Him Billingham.
I
at
will.
Least once
I will for you.
Before,
hey, so Billingham. Yeah.
Mr. Yeah. Billingham.
Yeah. And I'm going to be working with Brian Polito.
Oh, well, you can say hi to Brian for mm-hmm. us. Yeah,
absolutely. So, yeah, we hadn't mentioned it. This is going to come out on, like, Thursday, I believe.
I don't know whenever
I will.
Yeah,
whenever I edit
tonight.
It, I guess. Tomorrow is WonderCon in San Francisco.
Why don't you just put this out Monday, and then if we're doing another show.
Whenever. This weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday is WonderCon. I'll be there. I'll be at the Hero booth. And the podcasting panel, Saturday at 1 o'clock.
Go see Chris and yell out his name at the podcasting panel.
I'll be drunk.
Neesman, you suck balls.
You're damn right. Wait, huh? What?
Just yell out, hey, you know, this is what I want somebody to do.
Dickweed.
If you go to WonderCon this weekend and you go to the podcasting panel, I want someone, just want someone to scream out, death to Around Comics. In the or
thank
like,
goodness you guys quit. You suck.
No. Even better. When Chris is talking, just somebody scream out, "Poser!" Because you know he doesn't do.
I'll
a podcast
give a quarter buck to whoever does that.
Poser.
I'll bring a quarter buck.
Your show sucked. All
right. Well, I tell you what, I would like to thank everyone for joining us today. That would be Tom and Sal.
I'd like to thank everyone for listening for the last 2 years.
Hey, we still have one more episode left.
Oh yeah. Shit!
Isn't that
all right?
Thank Mark as always at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles.
Thank you, Mark.
Everyone. Have a fantastic whenever to whenever. We'll be back whenever.
Rest of your life.
In the meantime.
In between time.
We'll be everywhere in.
And around my house.
I can't believe we're doing another fucking episode.
I'm really not a poser.
God, how the hell did I get roped into another one?